We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello this morning, and welcome to our program, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds, on Bread for the Journey Radio. Before we begin, I'd like to extend our condolences to the families and loved ones of those killed and injured in the tragedy in Aurora, Colorado, as well as the family of the person who committed this tragedy. Everyone is in pain today. So together for the next 10 seconds, how about we offer up silence and a prayer for a day in which no one feels so isolated and angry that the only way they know to respond is to kill or hurt other people or other living things. We collectively together offer 10 seconds of silence for a world of inner peace and harmony. Let's take 10 seconds. Thank you. This morning, I'll be interviewing two passionate people who are nurturing and healing their communities through the power of healthy local food, Catherine Couch and Erica Barajas. Catherine is the executive director of the Ceres Community Project, an incredibly well-loved program in Sonoma County, which delivers truly nourishing meals made of healthy, locally grown foods to people with serious illnesses. And volunteer teenagers are the cooks. Bread for the Journey of Sonoma County gave them a startup grant 5 years ago, and today they've delivered over 110,000 nourishing meals. Our second guest, Erica Barajas, is the program director of Fair Food Matters in Kalamazoo, Michigan. They've been educating thousands of diverse youth and adults every year through their school-based gardens, community gardens, farmers markets, a commercial kitchen, and dozens of food-related events and educational programs. Our Bread for the Journey chapter in Kalamazoo has given them 4 micro-grants, and the first one was a startup grant for their first year of operation. But first, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Bread for the Journey. I'd like to begin with a thank you to our guest last week who contacted me saying her foundation would like to financially support our work. We had a lovely connection later on the telephone in which I feel that we truly met on a deeper level. I'm sure a friendship is beginning between us and our two organizations. And I'd also like to thank our guest from last week, Deborah Welch, author of Forgiveness at Work, who introduced us. If you're listening for the first time, you might be wondering who Bread for the Journey is. You've been listening to Bread for the Journey Radio. But Bread for the Journey itself is a nonprofit organization that's been around for 22 years. We are dedicated to nurturing the seed of generosity in every human heart. And we have 20 chapters in 20 cities around the country, each of them giving small grants to people who are making their communities more vibrant or healthy or just. We do this Herculean task with only 2 part-time staff members and over 120 volunteers around the nation, and we're growing. In the past 2 months, we've received 6 requests to start new chapters, and our newest one, which is just beginning, is in Omaha, Nebraska. So our chapters, as you can well understand, are run by volunteers, and what they do is a small group of people come together and form an organization that raises money locally from friends and family and colleagues in a very casual kind of way, and they give it away to people in the community who are doing things to make the community better. We give grants in the area of arts and education and environment, and we serve youth and elders and women. We serve the homeless. We don't actually put a limit on what our chapters can give to. We believe that a community needs a lot of different kinds of things, and we trust the community, the people who live in that community, to know what it is they need. And so when someone comes to us and says they'd like a small grant, we meet them casually over a cup of tea or at a meal, and we ask them to just tell us in their own words what it is they're doing in the community. And if the fit is right, sometimes we give them a grant right there on the spot. And so we try to give in a way that has no strings attached. And I mean, they're doing what it is they said they're going to do, and we trust them to do it. We trust them to spend the money well. And so the work is really our work to, as I said, our vision statement is to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And the only way we really do that is to nurture the seed of generosity in our own heart. So the people who volunteer for Bread for the Journey chapter are really growing and nurturing the seed within them that then sort of extends out and touches the people to whom we've given grants. And then those people touch the people they're serving. And that's how we feel like we can change the world. It's our way. So and now I'd like to introduce you to our guests. Catherine Couch, MBA, is a professional chef and an activist. Her life work centers around helping people connect with local, seasonal, and whole foods, discover the joy of cooking for themselves, and find meaningful ways to engage in their communities. She has worked in the corporate and non-for-profit worlds, including 4 years as Director of Communications for the Hunger Project U.S. The Hunger Project is an educational organization focused on changing our understanding of the causes of and solutions to hunger in the world. Catherine's been supporting the series Community Projects Flowering since its inception in the summer of 2006. And for those of you that may not know, Ceres is the Roman goddess of growing plants, the harvest, and motherly love. And I would say that this beloved organization is truly the personification of her. Good morning, Catherine, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. And I'd also like to introduce you to our other guest, Erica Barajas. She's the manager of the Douglas Farmers Market and the Growing Matters Garden. She has a background in science education with a BA in evolution and ecology from UC Davis and an MA in education from UC Santa Cruz. She serves on the Kalamazoo Community Foundation's Fellowship to Advance Racial Equity and is a member of their Inclusion and Diversity Committee. She and her husband volunteered in the Peace Corps in Bolivia before moving to Michigan. Welcome, Erica. Delighted to have you on the show.
It's wonderful. I'm glad we could make it. Thanks, Mariana.
Yeah, you're welcome. Catherine, let's begin with you. I understand that in 2006, you received a call from a friend asking her if she could hire your teenage daughter for the summer. And that phone call set you on a path of teaching young people to cook and providing nourishing, locally grown meals to people struggling with a serious illness like cancer. Can you tell us a little more about this story in the beginning of Ceres?
Yes, I had run a home delivery service in Sonoma and Marin County from 1993 to 2003, and I'd sold that business. And in the summer of 2006, I got a call from an acquaintance of mine who was very interested in having her teenage daughter get a job over the summer and also wanted her to learn how to cook, and asked me if I would hire her. And unfortunately, I didn't have a way to hire her. And we ended up creating this project for 7 weeks in the summer of 2006 where Megan and I got together one afternoon a week, and we prepared meals for three families that were dealing, two of them were dealing with cancer, and one was a man who'd had a stroke. And I've always had a passion about young people learning how to cook. I think it's really tragic that so many of them are growing up without a direct connection to either where their food comes from or even how to feed themselves. And so I was motivated from that perspective, and in my previous work had cooked for many people dealing with illness. And one of the things that happens when people get sick is it's the time when they actually most need to eat well, and it's often the first thing that goes out the window. And so Megan and I started cooking, and the first day that we cooked together, the dad in a family of four, the mom had metastasized, stage four metastasized breast cancer, came by to pick up the meals that we had made. And when I introduced myself and Megan and we started telling him what we had made for them that day, there was this look of just utter relief in his whole body. And I looked over at Megan, and she was about 6 inches taller. Hmm. And that was, I think, the seed among many others in my life over the years. And literally what happened was about 3 or 4 weeks later, I woke up at about 7 in the morning and just had a gestalt of this needed to be bigger than just Megan and I. And so that began a process, where I had a conversation with Bread for the Journey and many other people, and we launched the project in March of 2007, and it's grown exponentially since then.
What a beautiful story. I was talking last week on my show about the power of things that happen in the night and how oftentimes we wake up.
Yep.
Well, oftentimes we wake up either we're very clear about a dream or we just have a really clear directive and there's nothing that stands in the way. And it sounds like that's what happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. And that's beautiful, this picture of Megan standing 6 inches taller.
And it happens over and over again with our teens. One of our volunteers described how she can always tell when there's a new teen in the kitchen. When they're carrying the bags of meals out to her car, they're kind of shy and awkward. And she'll say, a month later, it's like, I'm carrying the bags out to the car. And they've just like stepped into this role and they see themselves differently. And they're really in their power then.
How is it that, well, I imagine that when you began dreaming of this, because Megan was involved in helping you make this meal, you had this idea of we need to involve more teenagers. How did you begin? Did you just reach out to schools or?
It's a long story, but we started, and this is how we really coach all of the projects that are communities that are replicating what we're doing now, is we started really small. We started in a church kitchen with myself and five teens, primarily from one school where I happened to have a young friend who was a junior. I had run a professional business, and, the big question, of course, was how many meals can you cook in 3 hours with five or six teenagers who don't know much about cooking?
Mm-hmm.
And so, we began cooking for four families, and it was a very grassroots, all-volunteer effort for the first year. And we moved from four families in March of 2007 to 12 families by the end of that year. We prepared 4,500 meals in our first year. In January of the next year, we added a second cooking day, and we provided 17,000 meals in the second year. And it really, the whole project has grown just very organically. We didn't promote it all the first year. My big concern was that people would call up wanting meals, and we were going to have to say no to them. And I thought that would be a very disheartening thing for people to do, to think that they had found a service that could help them and then to be turned away. And so we were very protective of it in that first 9 months. And, and kids shared it with their friends. And a few people were helping us with delivery. And they told people, and our clients told people that they knew in treatment rooms. And so it was very, very organic. And then at the end of that year, the local newspaper did a full-page story about what we were doing. And we started to get more volunteers, and it's just been this very organic process. One of the interesting things is we've actually never had to outreach to get kids, and that's a question that I'm often asked when I speak. They'll say, "How do you recruit the teenagers?" As if we have to like drag them into the kitchen.
Right.
And the truth is, just like all of us, young people are looking for meaningful ways to give back. They want to be connected in heart-centered ways. They want to know that they make a difference in the world. And preparing food for people whose lives are on the line is a very profound thing to do. And it's a level of experience that we're not giving our young people in very many situations in their world. And, we regularly have now 15 to 20 kids a month showing up at our volunteer orientation. We have 125 kids active in the program, and we almost always have a waiting list to fit kids into the schedule.
It's amazing. And in the process, they're learning how to take care of themselves because they're learning how to prepare good food.
Right. They're learning how to cook. They're learning about the connection between what they eat and their health.
Right.
They're gaining leadership skills. They're developing tremendous amount of self-esteem. I mean, we say, of course, they're all learning how to cook. We always say they're all learning how to cook kale, and they're all learning how to eat kale. But the profound thing that's happening is when they sit in a circle with one of our clients come in regularly, and that client looks them in the eye and says, "Thank you for saving my life."
Right.
They see themselves differently. They see who they can be in the world in a different way. And like you were talking earlier about the we call it the awakening the heart of compassion, that when their hearts become open to allow in the suffering in the world and to see that they have the power to contribute to that, their understanding of who they are in the world shifts. And that will never change. That's something that they will carry with them always. So we view that as the profoundest level of our work. And yes, obviously, they're all learning how to cook. They all know how to put a healthy meal on the table. All of our clients, are receiving nourishing meals. But even on the client side, the most profound part is what our clients say back to us. I can feel the love in the food, and it feels like the whole community cares.
Mm.
So the deepest part of our work is really in that one of our teens called it the cycle of gratitude. And yes, many things are happening in the more material realm that are, of course, important.
Right. I can feel the love in our food, and we know the community cares.
Yeah.
That's more powerful than any medicine, I imagine.
Exactly. And, I know Erica will second this, but food is such a powerful vehicle for us as human beings. It's the core thing that we all need. We all need to be fed. And so whether you're feeding or being fed, you're in that deep, profound connection with other people and also with the earth.
Right.
It supports us, and that's core for us as human beings. And the research is even though food is tremendously important, and for cancer patients particularly, 80% of them end up malnourished because of treatment, which has effects on increases side effects and treatment outcomes and all those things. But the research is even more strong about the relationship between human beings being connected in strong social networks is more profoundly important for healing and health even than the food that we eat.
Right. Yeah, it takes eating to a whole new level. It's really sounds like true nourishment.
Absolutely.
On every level. We have to take a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. We're speaking with Catherine Couch and Erica Barajas. And when we come back, I'll ask Erica a few questions so that she can begin to join in on this conversation as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to the Empowered Healer Show with Dr. Susan Allison. Our program will help you to heal yourself, support those around you, and enhance your work and your relationships. Healing can be physical, emotional, or spiritual, and it can be personal or collective for the healing of our planet. Dr. Allison and her guests will offer methods of healing that will go beyond your life and reach the lives of others. Tune in to the Empowered Healer Show, airing live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Is your computer making your life easier or more of a headache? Are you using all of the tools to make your life more productive and less of a stress? You need to listen to the Microsoft Princess Insider with Melanie Goss, dubbed the Microsoft Princess. Melanie has been a certified expert in all things Microsoft since 1998, and her expertise will have you taking back control of your life and letting your computer handle the efficiency of day-to-day projects. The Microsoft Princess Insider airs live every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome to those of you who are just joining us. We've been talking to Catherine Couch of the Ceres Community Project and Erica Barajas of Fair Food Matters, two people who are passionate about food and nourishment and local healthy foods. We've been talking to Catherine quite a bit in our first segment, so I'd like to open this one with a few questions for Erica. How about you tell us a little bit about the work of Fair Food Matters in Kalamazoo, Michigan?
Sure. Well, we are a nonprofit organization that's about 11 years old now. Our main programs are all focused around local food in different ways. So we have five major programs right now. We have the Growing Matters Garden, which is our oldest program. It was really started as part of a food production site for the local People's Food Co-op to grow food locally and get it available in the grocery store there at the natural food store. And then it very soon evolved into an educational program for youth and community members at large around how to grow food sustainably and organically. Whether it was certified organic or not, but just in using really organic methods. So that continues to run as an educational program and also growing a significant amount of food for selling at local farmers markets. And then we also have the Can Do Kitchen, which is a small business food enterprise incubator program. It's a commercial kitchen space that is fully licensed by the state of Michigan. So people who are interested in starting a small business can come and rent the space and receive small business support so that they don't have to be on their own in starting a small business. And we've had several graduates from the program move on to having their products available in retail outlets in Michigan.
How exciting.
So that is also a brand new kitchen that was built last year that had previously been located in church kitchens and other, I think it was in a trailer at one point. So it's moved around and finally has a permanent home as of last year.
Lovely.
And then we have the Douglas Farmers Market, which is one of our newer programs. It was started last year really in an effort to increase access to healthy and local food in a neighborhood that is just on the borderline of being considered a food desert, really mm-hmm. not having access to fresh, healthy foods in any way, and certainly not local food. So that's a partnership that we started last year with the Douglas Community Center that's located in a lower-income neighborhood in Kalamazoo.
and just really trying to raise awareness around the importance of local food, but also just providing another outlet for people to access local food.
Right.
And then our other two programs are the Common Ground Community Gardening Project, which is by far our most collaborative project. It's a partnership with Michigan State University Extension, which houses the Master Gardeners program, the Kalamazoo County Land Bank, and then the Kalamazoo Nature Center. And so that partnership with Fair Food Matters is set up to support people who are running community gardens or people who are interested in starting a community garden. Mm-hmm. And there's a centralized resource shed where there's tools that can be borrowed in exchange for volunteer hours and then free workshop series to help people build up their knowledge and experience around growing their own food.
Great.
And then our final program is 10 years old this year, which is the Southwest Michigan Harvest Fest. That's located about 10 miles outside of town at a farm called Tillers International, where we just have a celebration around harvest time and local food and really tying things together for the season as far as what's going on in the local food movement in Kalamazoo.
It's so amazing to me as I'm listening to all the things that you do and what Catherine is doing, that the common element is wanting people to be able to grow healthy food, prepare it for themselves, and know about where our food comes from. And for everyone to have access to these kinds of foods, whether you're in an impoverished neighborhood or whether you're sick, and how different these two programs are. Like, you can have this vision of one thing and have so many different expressions of it. And these are two that are very different expressions that are really achieving the same goal.
Sure.
I was struck by that. So you are working with, Erica, you're working with some elementary school kids, and we were talking earlier with Catherine about working with young people. Tell us a little bit about your work with elementary school kids.
Sure. Well, the main, I wear two hats at Fair Food Matters. One is my Growing Matters Garden Manager hat, and my other one is the Douglas Farmers Market hat. So I'm putting on, you can visualize me putting on the Growing Matters Garden hat right now. So that's where we have a partnership with a local elementary school where there is a school garden there that was established about 6 years ago by the school and through with some funding through a magnet grant that the school received. And so what we do there is, during the school year, we have garden-based education going on, whether it's, we do get a little bit of snow in the winter, so sometimes we're doing indoor lessons around worm composting, and classrooms will have a bin, a Rubbermaid bin with worms that they'll take care of over the winter. And then when spring comes around, then we have full classrooms that come out into the garden, and we set up stations for the students to rotate around, so they get to do 10 or 15 minute stations around different things in the garden that incorporates learning gardening tasks, but also we have a great collection of garden themed books. So we set out burlap sacks in the garden and they get to read books together. We have a journaling station, and we have an art station, and then also a science and measurement station, and then all the gardening activities. So really getting them out into the outdoor classroom of the garden and having a good time as a group, as well as really gaining some individual experience and knowledge through the mini lessons that they go through. And
That's
then during
great.
The summer, then our organization just hosts a weekly volunteer night where people can drop in and help out to keep the garden going during the real growing season in Michigan when the kids aren't in school. So my other favorite part of working at the elementary school is that we have an after-school group that's called Club Grub, which is focused on growing food but also on preparing healthy snacks. And so we work with about a dozen second and third graders each year for after school, and have them help prepare snacks. So they're using they're using kitchen utensils and learning recipes and getting to harvest things from the garden and bring them in and prepare them. And some of my favorite experiences with that group each year is that there's always at least one student who says, "We're going to put black beans and brownies? No way, I'm not eating that," at the beginning of the lesson. And then by the end, that student is the one who's asking for seconds and thirds and things like that. There's always something that kids are like, "There is no way. You cannot make me eat that." And then half an hour later, they're like looking around to see if anybody's watching and shoving it in their mouth. And we had the same kind of experience with kale. It was interesting Catherine brought up kale because that's something that I certainly was not aware of when I was in second grade. And now I can't stop myself from eating kale chips or just making kale salad. But to see kids trying new foods that either they've never seen before or they may have heard was something that they didn't want to eat, but then they try it again in a different form, it's really great to see the resistance that's there initially and then the very, very fast transformation that happens, whether it's because of peer pressure and one kid tries it and then they all want to try it, or if it's just that we can come up with recipes that kind of confront their beliefs around what something's going to taste like. So it's really that group continues to be to bring me a lot of joy as far as the stories and the memories that come from working with that group. And then, you know, I've now that I've been doing it for 3 years, then I've seen kids who are now in fifth grade, who are in second grade, who still have this. Actually, one student just came to the farmer's market that we run last week and remembers me and everything. But I took her around and we walked to the different vendor booths and I just kind of informally quizzed her on what things were, and she knew most of the vegetables and fruits that were out on the vendor's tables. And then she kept reminding me of lessons and recipes that we had done in Club Grub. So I felt like I don't often get to have that kind of follow-up with kids because they graduate from elementary school and move on and don't come back. So it was a very special experience to have her, you know, validating a little bit for me.
Oh, that's great.
This
fun.
Really is having it.
How do you make,
kales
taste good in chips? Is it to tell us to do over the phone? I mean, over
well,
the radio?
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of different recipes available online, but there's one that I found on allrecipes.com or something like that, that uses apple cider vinegar, olive oil, and then a slew of different spices. I know there's cardamom and cumin and some interesting curry-based spices. And then the secret something I had never used before was nutritional yeast. This is a vegan cheesy kale chip recipe. So the nutritional yeast was kind of the kicker in there as far as hooking me on them for life.
I used to have nutritional yeast in popcorn when I was working with when I was working with the nutritionist. It's salty, you know. It has a salty flavor, and it sticks to things that have a little bit of moisture to them.
Absolutely. So it's fun for me too because here I'm learning alongside with the kids too. That I get inspiration from them becoming inspired, and then I try new things that I wasn't trying before.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much. Catherine, you must be listening to this and having some ideas for yourself. Do you give snack foods as part of the meals that you deliver to people? Do they enjoy snack foods, I imagine?
Yeah, we do. We do primarily entrees, dinners, and a soup and salad. But our teens get together a couple to three times a year, and we do teen movie night, as part of our teen education program. And we just showed Queen of the Bees, and earlier this year we showed the movie Dirt. And when they get together, we did a pizza making night, and last time we did a taco night. And we often do popcorn with nutritional yeast, and we're big on kale chips at Ceres, and we make that kind of stuff as well. The thing that the connection that I made was we have a flourless, dairyless chocolate cake recipe that has garbanzo beans in it. So the black bean recipe, and, you know, clients and teens alike are always like, garbanzo beans and cake. Uh-huh. And, when you taste it, it tastes like a fudgy chocolate cake. And, it, you know, that whole issue of getting people to move beyond their existing relationship with food. And the interesting thing for us in terms of working with people who've been diagnosed with a serious illness and with teens, we realized as we got into the work that we were doing that those are probably two of the populations that are most open to changing their diets. You know, people who are sick because, you know, they're facing mortality and suddenly they're much more willing to give up the Big Mac than they might have been 6 months before. And young people because they're moving away from their, what I call their family of origin, and they're out in the world and they're in this very curious period in life where they're really asking a lot of questions about how they, the choices that they want to make, how do I want to be in the world? And so there's this opening that people have that doesn't exist for very many of us at very many times in our lives. And, you know, we've had experiences of people really who were literally, you know, fast food junkies who, you know, get diagnosed with cancer, some serious illness. And when they come into our program, we always say, you know, we do a whole foods, you know, primarily plant-based diet. Are you willing to try eating this way? And this one man was like, yeah, I'll try it, but, you know, I don't know. It was, and really, he literally ate mostly burgers and potatoes. And 3 months later, he said, I have never felt this good in my life. I'm never going back to the way that I ate before. So that's part of what is this magic about the pieces that we're bringing together is that we're catching people in this moment where there's more opening. And in that space, we're giving them a lived experience of what healthy food looks and feels and tastes like, and they're getting to discover for themselves that it actually tastes good and that they feel so much better when they eat this way. And that's really where a lot of the change is happening.
That's beautiful. And we are about to take a break. So thank you, Catherine and Erica, for this enlightening conversation, and we'll continue in our third and final segment in just a few minutes. Please stay with us. We're talking to Catherine Couch of Ceres Community Project and Erica Barajas of Fair Food Matters. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
9 different energy systems make up the energy body. Energy is all around us and connects us. Energy exerts a major control over our biology and is a big reason why you should be tuning in to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Deatley. We'll explore energy balance techniques, tips, and patterns to keep your flow of energy optimal to maintain maximal health. By adopting these techniques, you will keep your energy body and physical body in harmony. Listen for Energy Medicine and Optimal Health, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
News, opinion, your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back. We're here on Bread for the Journey Radio, our show, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Deeds. And we're speaking with Catherine Couch of the Ceres Community Project and Erica Barajas of Fair Food Matters. We began talking in between the break and I stopped the conversation and said, Catherine, why don't you talk about this and speak with Erica, ask her question. And so I'm going to give the floor to Catherine to cover this.
So what we were talking about is, at Ceres, you know, we started with this idea of bring kids in the kitchen, teach them how to cook, and, you know, people who were sick who needed meals would get meals. And, you know, that's lovely, and there's definitely important impacts there. But our biggest learning over the last 5 years has been in this area, the deep longing that we all have to feel part of a community. And there's been, I think, over the last, when I look at my parents' generation through to the generation of young people that are coming up right now, there's been this rending of the bonds of relatedness that have kept us together as a culture. And what we have seen, now we really view an essential part of our work as being about building community, and that food is this really powerful way that we can connect to one another and have everyone who's involved feel that way of belonging to something bigger than themselves. And I was really curious about whether and in what ways Fair Food Matters is having that same experience, that yes, people are learning how to grow food and all of those things are happening, but that there's something bigger that happens as well. So I'd love to hear Erica talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely, Catherine. I really feel like, it's actually kind of embedded in our language and in the goals for the Douglas Farmers Market in particular, because our two main goals are to increase access to healthy, local, affordable, and culturally appropriate food in this one target neighborhood in Kalamazoo. But then our other goal, which sometimes I feel like should be the first goal, is to create an event that brings people together and builds community. I really agree with what you were saying as far as the longing that's there. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, having lived outside of the United States and coming back and feeling this, just really noticing the individualistic tendencies of everybody kind of like pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, and which is not physically possible. And then, you know, just like everyone kind of being on their own, and then there being this, a loneliness, even though you're surrounded by a lot of people at times. And a real need to connect with people on an authentic human level, that when you sit around a table together, or when you share a piece of fruit even from a farmer's market, like we just had, it was so hot on Tuesday, and one of the vendors cut up a watermelon and just brought us all a piece of watermelon, and it was just this very simple moment around us all feeling the heat and, you know, having a little bit of suffering because of that in our different ways, but then having this wonderful, nourishing moment of cool, crisp watermelon that was grown within 100 miles of Kalamazoo, and just, the simple pleasure of that tied us all together in that one moment, and how, you know, buying something or even just like going to a sporting event or a movie or something like that doesn't really create as much of a, although you're around a lot of people, you're not with those people and you're not really sharing the same experience. So I feel like being out in the garden together and dealing with, you know, the weeds that are growing in the garden, or dealing with the weather conditions, that just those moments, bond you together with a fairly simple experience that then leads to you sharing these little moments that really, I feel like those little moments add up to a lot as far as building relationships and just creating trust and the openness that you were referring to also about just trying new things, that the more time you spend with people, the more comfortable you can become. So creating more opportunities for people to come together around food seems like a great way to just be moving in a real positive direction.
You know, I even do that here. I even do that here, just in my own home. Or We grew some vegetables last year, and I'll create a small basket and bring it to a neighbor. If I make a pot of soup, I want to share it. You know, I made a big thing for people at a local community foundation, a local foundation that has supported us, just showed up one day with food that I prepared for everybody there. It is a powerful connector.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to shift us a little bit in conversation because I wanted to talk a little bit with you, Catherine, about the breadth now of your work. You're both in Sonoma County and in Marin County. You're adding three more locations before next year. If someone was listening to this, I want you to tell us about that. And then perhaps if someone was listening to this show and thought, oh, I'd like to start something like series, how would they go about it and what's the process?
Right. From the very beginning, we were interested in creating a replicable model. And the simple way to think about it is almost every community has kitchens that are sitting empty, kids that need meaningful ways to be connected, and food that's going to waste, and people who are in need. And really, the essence of what we're doing is bringing those pieces together and creating something. Mm-hmm. And so we were approached, I think it's like 3 years ago now, and we helped a project in Napa County get started. They're independent from us, but they provide meals to very low-income cancer patients that are involved with St. Helena Hospital. And then we have a cookbook, which is available around the country and, you know, through Amazon and so forth. And we were approached by a group in Bay Village, Ohio, right outside of Cleveland, and another group in Summit, New Jersey. And so both of those projects came online in 2011, and in late 2010, there was a lot of interest in Marin, and there were some things happening down there, and we had some relationships, and so we have a volunteer-run project that's based in Marin County, which is just south of us, that is part of our umbrella, so we're serving both counties now as an organization, and we continue to get inquiries on a pretty regular basis, and I just spent a week in Nashville, Tennessee, working with a team there. The plans to be up and running by October, and we are hosting teams from Geneva, Illinois, outside of Chicago, and Santa Cruz, California, the week after next, who will be coming here for a 4-day training. And so what we do now is we have a community guide, a startup guide. When people call and say, I'm interested in starting something in my community, we send that to them and say, you know, here's some guidelines to help you start thinking about what you're doing. We view a project based on series as doing four things: providing whole foods meals to people who are dealing with some sort of illness, using teenagers as the chef, and having the project be committed to building community. And so the model that we're working with could be used in many ways. It could be used on a Native American reservation with diabetes, could be used in the inner city with diabetes or with other health conditions. We don't care. It doesn't have to be cancer patients. You know, there's lots of ways that it can be translated. If people, once they get the community guide, are interested in working with our model particularly, then we invite them to come do a 4-day training with us. And it's pretty extensive, and we provide a lot of resources, some hands-on experience in the kitchen. It's really important to us that people understand the culture of our organization and the deeper levels of what we're working with. We share our teen education program, lots of materials, and we also have developed over the last 2 years an integrated database system that is available very affordably for organizations starting up that provides the infrastructure support to really run the program. So we're interested in getting 3 to 5 projects started again next year and then looking at how do we really go much more aggressively replicate the project in 2014. So that's kind of what we're working with right now.
It's very exciting. I had this idea, or I had this picture when, Erica, you were speaking about the can-do kitchen and the commercial kitchen. What an interesting use for that if someone in Kalamazoo ever showed up and wanted to create something. I have no idea if that would work, but I actually saw that connection immediately.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I mean, that's essentially one of the functions of the can-do kitchen is just anyone who is in need of a space can come and just rent the space without having to build the kitchen and get the insurance and all the licensing. So it helps reduce some of that overhead cost of starting up a program. And I know there's a lot of other incubator kitchens. I know there's a fairly famous one in San Francisco called La Cucina that does.
And there's one also in Marin County.
Yeah, I mean, they're popping up all over the place. It's really,
one of the things that I want to say about the essence of what we're doing with the food health piece in particular is the kids who come to Ceres come not because they're going to learn how to cook, but because they're given an opportunity to give back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been the success factor for us in our work with teens. It's not about what we're giving them. It's what they're giving.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it's interesting to think about, like, in Kalamazoo, that, you know, if someone was to pull together a project where they were cooking for, you know, either very needy people or very at-risk people in the community, that kids then get to show up in this different way. And as a side benefit, they learn all this stuff that you want them to learn. But that's not why they show up.
Sure.
Right. It's back to that awakening the heart of compassion that occurs in the process. Yeah. And building community. That's how they build community with the community in which they live and feel that, like, they're really a part of it and contributing member of a part of it. Yeah. Well, we're coming to the close of our show, and I am so grateful to the two of you. And I'd like you perhaps to tell people how they can reach you. Perhaps, Catherine, you can give us your web address or a phone number or an email address, whatever you'd like over the air, and then I'll go to Erica.
Great. Our website is www.ceresproject.org, ceresproject.org, and our office phone number is 707-829-5833, and those are both great ways to connect with us. And the email address is info@ceresproject.org.
Great. And Erica, go ahead.
Yep, we have about the same type of information. So our website is www.fairfoodmatters.org, and that is fair, F-A-I-R, not F-A-R-E-R-E. And our number is 269-492-1270. And we also have an email address, just info@fairfoodmatters.org.
Well, thank you both so much for showing up today, and we'll keep you, our listeners, posted if anything pops up and occurs between these two organizations. You never know. That would be a fun outcome. And so, as you all know, Bread for the Journey Radio is part of Bread for the Journey, the nonprofit organization, and all organizations you've heard from today, Ceres Community Project, Fair Food Matters, and Bread for the Journey could use your support if you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution. Please go to any of these websites. If we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, may all beings be happy, may all beings be safe, may all beings be free. See you next week.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.